I had some interviewing to do too. So I found myself one day, this is really interesting. I had to go to the Lee Strasberg Institute, which wasn't that far from where I was staying, actually. And I met a long time, someone I've been writing to for years, and I've been writing about the Multistages Newark's Play Contest for a long time. And the founder of Multistages is Lorca Perez, and she specializes in new theater works. Sure, her background, you know, is basically theater, visual arts, dance, music, and writing, which led her to create Multistages, which a theater company where artists from different disciplines work together to produce theater. She's artistic director. She's developed and produced all kinds of productions, readings, and festivals, and supervised 4 new works contests. She's also conceived and directed the majority of Multistages productions and has acted and designed puppets and masks for several productions. She's a native New Yorker. She's studied all over the, her bio is huge. If you want to know more about Lorca, go and look her up on Google. She's worked at every theater you can imagine. She's received an Inky Award from La Mama Experimental Theater Company and through the Harold and Mimi Steinberg Charitable Trust, numerous Multistages producing grants, and several La Mia Inc. Playwriting Awards. She's served on the NYU Teach School of the Arts Production Committee. She's a curator for NYU Hot Ink Festivals for Strasberg, which between 2002-2010, I'm talking Lee Strasberg here. She teaches at the NYU Strasberg Studio and at the Lee Strasberg Institute, and she's a member of numerous theater unions, including the League of Professional Theater Women. She's the co-president. Okay, here's my interview with Lorca Perez on Coral FM. I'm sitting here with Lorca Perez. I'm down in New York. I'm on location. I'm at the Lee Strasberg Institute. This is like, you can feel the energy in this building. All the young people around here, the actors, and everybody has the dream of becoming, you know, the next Marilyn Monroe, the next Marlon Brando, the next Harvey Keitel, the next Lee Strasberg. Multistages was developed by you.
Yes.
In 1997. How? Why did you put Multistages together? Like, I kind of know what your background is.
Right.
But what gave you the spark to develop Multistages?
Well, I had been working as an actor for a long time, and I had so many great friends who were playwrights whose work wasn't getting produced.
Okay. Which playwrights?
Oh, God. Well, Nick Bellito was one of the first playwrights that I worked with.
Okay.
Dorothy Tan I worked with. Finger Gale. Just so many. There were so many great writers, and I felt that I could sort of give them a stage.
Right.
And I was interested in working with new plays and helping develop them. And I had been directing for a while, and I also wanted to bring in multiculturalism.
Right.
And Melody Cooper was a playwright that I met, and African-American playwright. Mm-hmm. Very strong piece, Day of Reckoning.
Mm-hmm.
Wound up becoming the winner of one of our contests. So I really felt that there was a lot of unexplored material out there and undiscovered talent.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, let me try to do it, and I've done it.
I found in Canada, I think we're a little bit behind because... Do you know the piece Harlem Duet?
No.
Okay, it was the first all-American black, like all-American cast, African-American director. Uh-huh. Karen Robinson was in the lead, and it was written by Janet Sears. And there had never been an all-black cast, all-black director in Stratford. Mm. And it was, after 50 years, they decided to do this. So Karen was saying, you know, in the play, we're talking about some of the girl, you know, the women sitting in the audience. So they're really uncomfortable, but it's like, it's about time.
Yes.
You know, we're really far, you guys are so much more advanced than we are in Canada. I mean, we're getting better. But in the mainstream theater, and someone mentioned this to me off the record, it's still white bread. It's still a
and
white...
And men, probably, more so than women.
Yes, and it's still a white bread audience.
Well, New York is different.
Yes.
New York you know, theater is very different from anywhere else in our country as well. So we're still fighting the fight outside of Manhattan and Brooklyn. Actually, there's a lot of theater in Brooklyn and Queens now.
Yeah,
but I would say regionally, it still is an issue. Like the Guthrie Theater, they don't have any women being represented in the season coming up.
Wow.
Yeah, the Roundabout New York doesn't have any women represented as playwrights or directors.
The Roundabout Theater, no women.
Right.
So, and you just had a workshop on Monday, which I missed. So we're gonna discuss that as well, but. I'm going to go back to multi-stages here for a minute. How has the company evolved? It's 15 years old, right?
Yes. This November, we're 15 years old. Well, happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Thank you.
So how have you seen the company evolve over the last 15 years?
Well, a lot. At the beginning, we really were just donation-driven. I had friends and family and said, hey, give us $50. It was $100. And we sort of started out with, $2,000 workshops, a one-night event or something. And now we can do full-scale productions, and we've done bigger productions. We've done a lot of work with projections, with amazing projection designers. We've done musicals now, and sort of non-traditional musicals.
Right.
So we brought in a big team, choreographer and music director, and
all that stuff.
Yeah. So we've been raising more funds, getting bigger projects, running longer, and also we expanded the idea of bringing in the script development series. So we can actually follow
that.
A show for a couple of years if it's warranted and help develop it, get it on its feet, produce it, or have it move on to another theater.
Because this is multidisciplinary, multicultural theater.
Right.
So what do you mean by, what does multidisciplinary mean?
Okay, that sort of came from my background. I went to Bennington College, which is a very forward-thinking, experimental school, and I had, I'm a painter.
Yes, and you're also a puppet. I've made puppets. Masks? Masks in theater is a whole other, that is great.
Yeah.
Because I think when you have a mask on the stage, you have a lot more freedom.
Yes, you do, for character work. Mm-hmm. But at Bennington, we did a lot of interdisciplinary, we merged the arts.
Yeah.
So that was something that I found very exciting, and I wanted to sort of go in that direction for multi-stages so that we would bring in artists from other disciplines to combine talents and collaborate with theater.
So how does that... Okay, so how does that work? This is the other thing. And we have cross-collaborations.
Right.
And this, I think, is an amazing concept. But how does it work? You start with the playwright, and then do you bring in the voice? Do you bring in the dance? Do you bring in the... like?
The plays should have it already as part of the design of the play.
Okay.
So, for example, I'll go back to Melody Cooper's play, Day of Reckoning.
Okay.
That play was based on a historical character, Lucy and Albert Parsons, who actually were involved in the Haymarket in Chicago.
Right.
He became one of the Haymarket martyrs. Interracial couple in the 1880s.
Yeah, and that's okay.
And so, because we had this whole historical element to it, we actually went in and we got these incredible images from Harper's Magazine from the turn of the century, a lot of cartoons about the Haymarket. We brought in a terrific projection work with that. We had moments where Lucy Parsons was standing on stage surrounded by her portrait, and then she stepped out of the portrait. Steps out of the portrait. Yeah, beautiful things like that. And so the play lent itself to that, and the playwright, Melody Cooper, actually created a set of slide ideas. Like she would say, here, image of. And we used a lot of those, and then we went up and brought in a lot of our other pieces. Other ideas that we had to put in place. But it was already part... It was integral in
it
the
was
piece.
Into the, it was already,
it was
in, the
already
script.
In the script.
It was already part of script development.
Right.
Okay.
And then the Palace of Loneliness that we did back in 2001, that one also incorporated Chinese opera.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and it's a story that actually transcends time. It's a reincarnation story. The old story is written in verse...
Right.
And it's based on a Chinese Tang Dynasty legend about Yang Guifei, who's this concubine, and her emperor. And he becomes a traitor. They think he's a traitor, and she has to suicide herself. It's this wild story in the past. And then the character walks herself into a mental hospital in 2001 and says, "I've killed my boyfriend, who was my emperor in another life."
Wow.
So it's
great.
Yeah, it was really cool. And in that play, that also had already, because we had Chinese opera, and we had verse, and we had masks, and we had this other era, we were able to sort of incorporate dance, movement, music, and it was very exciting.
That was amazing. Oh, my God. Let's talk about tomorrow's playwrights. What? And the other thing I want to talk about is theater as a therapy. I'm not sure if you do this or not, but tomorrow's play. What subjects are they writing about? And how is the audience evolved? Are they evolving as fast as the genre is or not? Like, what? Yeah.
I think they are. I think people are, tomorrow, today, yesterday, you know, I think we don't ever reinvent the wheel anymore. But
no.
I think what we do is we see where the world is going, and writers just try to mimic that in some way, or try to teach.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there's a lot of lessons to learn in theater, you know, as an audience
mm-hmm.
member. A lot of war plays, but then we had a lot of war plays in the 60s. We had a lot,
yeah,
you know,
that's
Vietnam,
true.
Tracers. There were a lot of plays, Homefront. And now we have Eliot's Fugue, the Soldier's Story.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of plays that have brought in war, but now we're getting women's stories.
Which is good.
Right. But I was thinking specifically like women soldiers.
Yes.
You know, women that have gone into the theater arena. That's
yeah.
what they call war, the theater
yeah.
arena. And so now they're coming forth and talking about Abu Ghraib and
mm-hmm.
this kind of thing. So I think there's a lot of Middle Eastern
right.
theater going on now.
Yes.
There is a lot of theater, psychology dealing with mental illness. There's theater. Our play, the one that we just finished doing, was dealing with parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the electronic age and what the world is like today as a parent with children addicted to the internet and all the things that are happening.
Yeah, which is very relevant. That's very relevant. I talked about Harlem Duet. I talked about the audience changing. Let's talk about New Works. What's going on for New Works 2013? Because I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, we are too. We have our contest going on right now.
Okay.
And it is open to anyone of any at any level as a writer. We use we work with emerging writers, work with high profile playwrights.
And who do you work with? I'm just curious.
Oh, just a lot of people. You know, well, a couple years back, this was not actually as multi-stage. This was in my position as the Hodding curator. I worked with Arthur Copit.
Wow.
Yeah, that was really an exciting. I felt like a groupie, you know. It was like the rock and roll groupie of Arthur Copit. We worked with some really, Jeffrey Hatcher.
Yeah,
some terrific people. Susan Yankowitz,
yep.
marvelous playwright. So I've worked with, you know, people at all levels. But for multi-stages, we're looking for all new works.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be multidisciplinary and multicultural. So by that we mean it should have a story that's not just all about 10 American white men on stage.
Yeah, no kidding, because that, if you're going to do, you know, if you're going to do the classics, I find if you're going to do the classics on stage these days, there has to be you have to have a different vision.
Right.
It's all about the director.
Right.
I mean, the actor's going to do what the director wants to do, but it's all about the director, and you have to have a more relevant, you got to have a kick-ass vision, otherwise.
And diversity.
It's not going to work.
You want the audience to relate.
Yeah, theater is therapy. Have you ever done that? Had put on plays for or tried to teach people through theater life lessons?
Yes, very many.
Okay.
I'd say the best one to think of right now is when we did Hell and High Water, or Lessons for When the Sky Falls, Jamune Vetserker's play about Hurricane Katrina.
Okay.
And she was a survivor of Katrina, is a survivor of Katrina, and wrote this play based on her experiences.
Right.
Friends she knew, people she lost, people who committed suicide, people lost their homes. And it really was about the lessons that she learns told through a bag lady. in the play called Bagel.
I remember that.
And actually, she's having a performance on December 1st in honor of Hurricane, not in honor, but as an answer to Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah.
To try to honor the Actors Fund, which is a really important organization that helps actors and theater people in time of distress.
Mm-hmm.
And she's giving a portion of the money to Multistages as well.
That is awesome. Yeah. What, you know what? When Sandy, I felt so bad for you guys when Sandy hit.
Yeah.
How were you guys? It's the East Village, so I'm thinking,
we were in production.
No power.
We were in production. It was very difficult.
Yes.
We were doing The Island of No Tomorrows.
Yes.
A gorgeous play, which we just closed a week ago. We lost an entire week of production. We had a lot of our artistic team was in trouble. My genius projection designer, Jan Hartley, lives in Soho and was spending the night in the theater practically. I mean,
yeah.
It was really hard to get people to be able to work. We'd have a tech rehearsal with one actor because there were no trains running.
There were no trains and no power.
We had to cancel a whole week of shows. We postponed by a week. It was really difficult. We lost some money on that. But we were happy we were all together as a group.
Yeah.
And foraged, on.
My heart was out to New York. I thought, I'm coming down at the end of the month. Oh, my God. And then they get hit by a hurricane. This is awful. And I just... you guys just bounced back so well. It was amazing. Everybody I've talked to. I have the role of women in theater today. I have that written down.
Okay. Well, that I can address. I'm the co-president of the League of Professional Theater Women.
Yes. So you had an event last Monday.
We did.
About women in theater. And, so tell me about this.
So 10 women were on a panel. I was one of the members of the panel. And we were just talking about our roles in theater, especially in New York. Most of us are artistic directors and people who are managing directors of different theater companies.
Mm.
And it was considered downtown theater, so it was sort of off Broadway.
Which is, cool.
Primarily new works.
Yes.
Some companies, like 13th Street Rep was on the panel, and they do Christmas Carol. They've done some, more traditional shows, but they also develop new works. Multistages was on the panel. New Georges was on the panel. Club Thumb, New York Theater Workshop. And, it's terrific. Linda Chapman spoke on behalf of the theater. And we all just sort of talked about what we do in our each individual company, what we're looking for, how playwrights or directors might get involved in working with us.
Mm-hmm.
But through the League of Professional Theater Women, which, by the way, is a 500-member national and international organization, we have people from Canada, we have people from England, we have people from South Africa, we have people from...
So you guys all get together and talk.
South America.
Talk theater.
We talk theater, and we are really about advocating for women in the industry and trying to create gender parity. We have to have it. It's really a big, big problem.
I see, I've done a couple... I just started a wardrobe mistress in Stratford, but I find most people that are working in sound and technical stuff, there aren't too many women. There are women in stage management jobs, but...
Yeah, a lot of women in stage
not
management.
Not sound, not audio, not lighting, sort of. Stage management is getting a little better.
We've got a lot of women lighting designers.
Oh, okay.
That we do. And I just finished working with 22 women out of a company of 25. Including a female choreographer, of course, because that's easy. Female lighting designer, female projection designer, female... director, female composer, another female composer, female playwright, we're out there.
What's the advantage of all women working together? What is the ingredient that makes women so successful in the theater? What's the difference between so many men and just a few women rather than all women or...
This was an anomaly.
I mean,
I wouldn't say we normally do that, but...
I don't think it's a boys' club in the theater anymore, I think it's like a... Or is it?
Well, it shouldn't be, because it's really the women who are buying the tickets.
Well, that's true, too.
The audience... you look out in the audience, it's, 80% women in the audience, or they drag their husbands or partners there.
And once the partners get there, it's like, oh, my God, this was great.
Yeah. That's so, true.
You know, it's just there's stigma like, oh, I can't go to the theater. Like, oh, I'll be gay or I'll be perceived as gay. It's like, oh, my God, you're so stupid. You know, these are the lessons in life. This is how you learn this stuff. It's the human condition.
Right. But we have more women producers. We have more women artistic directors that are, you know, launching.
Yes.
Launching messages and missions. I don't think you, I mean, I'm not necessarily advocating to do a show with all women necessarily in the artistic company, but it was a fun experience for us because we were part of the League's League of Professional Theater Women's 30 play series, which was to honor the League's 30th anniversary,
which is amazing.
Yeah.
I interviewed Jackie Maxwell from the Shaw Festival.
Oh, fantastic.
She's probably one of the, there's not too many main theater festivals in Canada that have a woman as an artistic director.
Yeah.
She's one of very few. So, and she's still there. She's still kicking and she's still doing well. She's had her problems because she came from Toronto and she brought in some stuff that was kind of like, well, the audience is like, what are you doing? But now she's brought them along with her.
Right.
You also have a big event coming up this weekend, which I'm going to miss, which really pisses me off. And that's the AIDS Quilt Songbook. What's this all about?
Oh, I'm really excited. I was asked to direct the AIDS Quilt Songbook through the publicist of two operas I directed back in May,
mm-hmm.
which just won a big award, by the way.
Oh, congratulations.
From the National Opera Association.
What operas?
There were two world premieres by Bruce Saylor.
Okay.
The Image Maker, based on a James Merrill one act, and the other one is called My Kinsman Major Molyneux, based on a Nathaniel Hawthorne short story. Wonderful,
okay.
Beautiful, gorgeous
pieces. I will look these up because I have a friend of mine who's a soloist in the Vienna Opera, and they do very avant-garde stuff. Opera's changing big time, too.
Oh, this
was
definitely atonal modern music. Fabulous, fabulous stuff. So anyway, the publicist from that asked me if I would be available to direct the AIDS Quilt Songbook, which is the 20th anniversary of the original concert. And this one has a lot of the same pieces that were first premiered 20 years ago. They're pieces that are with lyrics of poems, new songs. Herschel Garfein is writing one of the new pieces. He's a wonderful opera composer. It's 20, I think it's 26 new works we have in this.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
so
it's pretty huge.
You must be swamped.
I'm swamped.
Oh, that is great.
12 singers, 2 actors, Cooper Union. It goes up on Saturday at 7:30.
And I'm sure it'll be a huge success.
Thank
I wish
you.
I was here.
Thank
I'm going to be on a plane back to Canada.
That would be fine.
That bugs me. I got one more question here. Well, I have two. The future for multi-stages. Where do you want to take it next?
Well, we're getting bigger.
Yes, you are getting bigger.
We're trying not to forget, you know, our roots and,
yes.
and our love for new work. So we will always do that. We will always do that. Our mission will not change. But we have a piece now, Temple of the Souls, that won also 4 awards this year from OLA, Hispanic Organization of Latin Actors. And it's our first real true musical. It's a phenomenal piece about the Taino and the Puerto Rican story. The Taínos were the indigenous people of Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
I'm half Puerto Rican, so I should say it properly.
Uh-huh.
And it's just Romeo and Juliet tale.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, basically, the conquistador's daughter falls in love with a Taino, and all hell breaks loose.
Well, this is good. This is
so
good.
That piece, we're really ready to move that and try to develop that even further. We need funding. We need money. But if we can, we think this really, really is something sensational.
This is great. I have another one. I have two. What to you is good theater, and who is your favorite playwright, and why? I have asked so many actors this.
I don't have a favorite playwright. I really don't. If I did, the playwrights would never talk to me again that I work with. I've probably worked with 150 to 200 playwrights
That's
at this
true.
Point, so I really can't.
Is there a piece that sticks out in your mind that stays with you?
You know, they all do.
All do in a different
it's
way.
Funny. I was just realizing I was talking about plays I did, you know, 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you're working on at the moment tends to be the most
present in your
present,
mind.
Yeah,
yes.
Which was for us Fenger Gale's
yes.
The Island of No Tomorrows, which we just did. But I'm always looking for, you know, the next terrific new work, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good enough. And do you have a favorite piece of music? Because this is radio, so I can
Yeah. I don't know. I love so many things.
Pick one.
Pick one. Oh, I guess one of my favorite pieces of all time is Smile.
Smile?
By Charlie Chaplin?
Yeah, me too. I love that piece. Song. I
mean, there's something transcending about that.
It is. You know? It's timeless. You're right. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
This has been really
thrilling at the Lee Strasberg Institute. I mean, he's right there. How many actors have come through here?
Oh, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. Thousands. Thousands. I've been teaching here for 10 years, or 12 years, so I've probably taught 1,000 students myself.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate it, Lorca.
Great. You're glad to be here.
You're awesome. Lorca, I always like to ask people what their favorite music is, and in Lorca's case, it was it's Smile, Charlie Chaplin. And being at the Lee Strasberg Institute was a major big deal as well. I mean, they have a theater named after Marilyn Monroe. Ruth Gordon was, I guess there's so many actors that have gone through there. So there was kind of an energy in the air with all the young actors sitting around. There was a guy working behind the desk that's actually from Aurora, Ontario, which I found really interesting. But anyway, so here is Smile for Lorca Perez from on Coral FM. Smile for Lorca Perez on Coral FM. Here's another New York artist. What have I got? Oh, yeah.